the name of the Father, of the Son, and Holy Spirit. Mine are the heavens, and mine is the earth. Mine are the nations, the just are mine, and mine the sinners. The angels are mine, and the Mother of God is mine, and all things are mine, and God himself is mine and for me, because Christ is mine and all for me. What do you ask then and seek, my soul? Yours is all of this, and all is for you. Do not engage yourself in something less, nor pay heed to the crumbs which fall from your Father's table. Go forth and exult in your glory. Hide yourself in it and rejoice, and you will obtain the supplications of your heart. Mary, Queen of Carmel. Holy Mother, St. Teresa. Holy Father, St. John of the Cross. In the name of the Father, the Son, and Holy Spirit. Well, this morning I think I left you in a interesting place, because for many of you it was probably you've never been here before. And I hope you've had time to think about it. More, I wouldn't say try to understand it, but try to get a sense of how it's possible that people could think like this. Okay? The thing to do with new thoughts, which are powerful thoughts, is not to try to understand them, first of all, but try to understand how it's possible to think like this. Because if you can work, if you can enter into that way of thinking, you might also begin to understand it. Because most powerful thought not only has a logic to it for an outsider to see, but the strength of it is contained within its internal logic. Okay? And so you can just try to enter into it. And as I said, that intellect, memory, will might be different for you, but just go through the Vegemite sandwich with banana and honey on top. And suddenly you're struck with all the things that make up intellect, memory, and will. Because the only reason you can get look is because of intellect, memory, and will. Everything somehow is happening just in that. Okay, I want to move on now, and rather than ask whether you've got any questions, because I'm sure that if I did, you would have them, and it would stop me talking about what I want to talk about. I want to talk about how our appetites or our desires, which is how we experience ourselves and how we choose to live as a consequence of our appetites and desires, how we choose to live according to our capacities, and how some choices build us up in our capacities and others pull us down, how in fact that works in relation to the way John understands the human person. By seeing the soul is made up of three faculties, intellect, memory, and will. By faculty, that means, I suppose it's the three components of the inner man, the three components of the inner person. I think now, there are things which are there which I can think, and not only things which are there, but things which are there in different ways. You don't simply have ideas in you, but every idea has connections with other ideas, has connections with not simply ideas, but full memories. Because it's the memory which gives, which it is by memory that I know that I exist in time, isn't it? Which is why it's a chapter 11 or something, a book 11 of St. Augustine's Confessions, his great tract, which is about time, but fundamentally it's his analysis of his memory. Because memory is that extraordinary thing. How do I know that there was a yesterday, and how do I then presume that there's a tomorrow? How do I talk about the fact that I exist within time? Because I've got a memory. Only because I've got memory can I speak about history. Only because I've got a memory can I speak about quality of life. If you had no memory, it would just simply be what's happening now. You've got nothing to compare with. You've got no sense of going forward or backwards. So this thing which we call memory, which John identifies as memory, is extraordinarily important. Because in fact, it's memory which networks everything, isn't it? You don't simply know something, you came to know it somehow. And according how you came to know it, it's imprinted in you differently. That's why there are some memories which are indelibly there. Some of them are wonderful, some of them are horrible. But they impact upon the rest of your life, don't they? Without a doubt. It's not the intellect which impacts. In fact, you've got no... We don't really assess our own intellect. Everyone presumes that... You know, you all presume you're intelligent. You know, I've never met anyone who comes to me, Father, I want to be a Carmelite. My problem is I'm so stupid. If someone did come, I'd think, my God, this is obviously a great vocation for the Carmelites because we're all stupid. But no one ever comes along with that truth in mind. You know, have you ever met anyone who wants... We've got no way of reflecting about it. We reflect upon what's there in the memory. And that's an extraordinary thing because it links so many things. Then there's the will by which I choose. It's the will by which I have choices because of my will. And it's what makes life life. Okay, if I didn't have a will, I would have no freedom. Everything would just be the way it is. You chose to come here this weekend. It's a choice that you made. And when you exercise your freedom through will, you're exercising your humanity, aren't you? It's when you can't choose things anymore because of frailty or something, these people start to say, how do you feel? Such a person has to rethink what it is to be human because we experience our humanness by doing things, don't we? Strangely, by choosing things. And when choice is taken away from us, it's not that we become less human, we have to think about things differently. Okay, so those three things are very, very important when we look at what it is. If you can think of another component which should be there, tell me. I can't think of another one because emotions somehow are caught up in the memory. Okay, which is why certain memories will trigger emotions, because those memories go with certain emotions, and certain emotions will lead you on to other thoughts and so on because of the way that they are connected together. So, what I want to do now is turn to what those of you who know the writings of John of the Cross will know where I'm going to start to look. And I know at least one of you has done his homework. He read the whole of the first book of the Ascent of Mount Carmel today. Did you read it today or since last night? Very impressive, isn't it, that we have some retreatants who will do that. I won't ask him to put his hand up. But you'll find it from about chapter 6 through to chapter 11, where John is looking at the appetites and saying how when the appetites are disordered, he says, let me tell you why disordered appetites are problematic. Okay? Because none of you ask me that question. You just presume that if you've got a disordered appetite, there must be a problem. No one asked me why. I'm glad, because I would have said you have to wait till tonight again. John says, let me tell you why disordered appetites are problematic. Because they impact upon the soul. And what I want to do initially is to begin simply by going through with you the way that they impact upon the soul in these parts, and then move from there to the spiritual perspective, which is from the point of view of the openness to God, to see, in fact, what has to happen in the intellect and memory and will for John in order for us to speak about spiritual and human growth in the full sense of the word. And if we get all of that done, just to cheer you up, we'll look at depression tomorrow. So I think I'll begin by rubbing this off. John speaks in his own peculiar terms, and I'll read to you what he says, at least in terms of the headings and the chapters, and rather than read directly from John, because it's one of the few reasons why a discounts Carmelite is helpful, because he can help you help you read John of the Cross. The parts that I want to look at are chapter 8, where John says, disordered appetites darken and blind the person. The next major one that I want to look at would be... Do I want to look at that one? That would be interesting too, but I might just move through what's there. The next would be chapter 9, disordered appetites defile the person, whatever that means. And there I'll look at paragraph 6 in particular. And then chapter 10, disordered appetites weaken the soul. Okay. Blind, defile, and weaken. That's what I'm going to look at.
And they're nice words, in fact, because they help you. Blind, defile, weaken.
You can see why I stop sending postcards when I go overseas to my brothers, because they all spend the whole time waiting for me to come back trying to read my postcard. The postcard does the rounds of the monastery, everyone having an attempt to read it. I write down what it says because no one can ever read it. And I get back and I can't read it either. So, what do you think John means when he says your appetites can blind you?
It's what we said. Said it earlier in the talk where if your appetite is such that the desire is overwhelming, you can't actually see through that desire because you're experiencing it so much.
Okay. Can you identify, I want you to think like John of the Cross, here we go, what part of the soul is being affected, what part of the soul is being blinded? The intellect, the memory, or the will? Intellect, yes.
It blinds the intellect.
Now, let's look into the experience of it. You can know that... what is it? That too much television is not good for you. Okay? It's fine, but you start watching more than you should and it becomes the way that you do things. And even though you know that too much is bad for you, after a while you can't help yourself because you kind of need it. And what happens then? Even though you know that this is too much television and therefore you're wasting time, as time goes on you don't even listen to what your intellect's saying. Because in the way that John of the Cross speaks and understands, where does the light come from for the soul, the light which guides the soul? The natural light given to you is the intellect, is your mind. Because your mind, if it's working well, should be able to sit back and say, hey, you shouldn't do this. It's not simply about conscience. It's not as simple as conscience. It's simply about what's objectively right and what's wrong. Don't try to talk about it in terms of conscience. Your intellect is there. Generally, what does intellect do? It helps you choose. It guides what you do. What else guides you? It's your mind. Unfortunately, it doesn't mean the more intelligent you are, the better a person you're going to be. Because the way the intellect guides is everyone has enough intelligence, really. It's not about being a rocket scientist. There's that sense in which you know that to pinch something from work, as small as a pen, you shouldn't do. But once you pinch a pen, you'll keep taking a pen, or you might take something else. And even though you know it, you're bypassing your mind. You're ignoring it. And that's what John means by it's being blinded. I used to work for a firm and before I joined the order, and in the end, suddenly there were no biscuits. And I said, why didn't I? You have to bring your own in from now on. Stop. Because it worked out that every staff member was eating a half to a full packet of biscuits a day. That means people were pinching them. I didn't, because I'm not a biscuit eater. If they'd had noodles or something, well, maybe something would have been pinched, but biscuits, I don't like sweet biscuits. But they were going at the rate of almost a packet a person per day. What was happening? And now these people were earning good money. Why were they pinching biscuits? Because they took one and they were no longer acting intelligently after that. The appetite blinded the intellect. And that meant that the intellect was not there to do what it was meant to do. And John of the Cross uses a simple test. But the problem with the appetite is the appetite itself is blind. The appetite doesn't think. It just kind of is there to make you want something. And you can't let your appetite do your thinking for you. And when the appetite blinds the mind, the intellect, what happens is your appetite does your thinking for you. And what does that mean in terms of John? No freedom. Because what is it that ensures freedom is, on one level, my mind is doing what it's meant to be doing. And what happens then when I allow my appetite to rule in a disordered way, as John spoke about it, he says, one consequence is it blinds the soul. Or the intellect doesn't do what it's meant to do anymore. Can you see what's happening? And it's kind of, I'm just going to go through these things because what I want to do just briefly this evening is to show the power of John's psychology and understanding of a human person. Because I think that's what happens. That is what happens. Oh, only one, that's okay. I hear confessions. It always begins with only one, it won't hurt. And I'll go on to explain also why only one hurts powerfully. Not only because it blinds the intellect, because of something else as well, which is also the way John sees things. You say, that's nothing, it's just one. It's nothing. You begin by telling one lie, and you would end up living by telling lies. Because the next lie supports the one which went before. And then the next one has to support two. Then there's an edifice of lies. It all began with one. And what it does on this level is it blinds you. Because as time goes on, you don't even think it's wrong anymore. Except when you have to go to confession. Oh, yeah, I do this. You know, it's only a white lie, Father. How many? Oh, 67 since the last confession. When was your last confession? Yesterday. Oh, 67 white lies since yesterday. But they're only white lies, Father. Blind. It might sound funny, but it's what happens. You allow the disordered appetite to rule once, and it won't be long before it blinds the intellect completely. Not always the case. Not in everything, because your weaknesses are not equally distributed. You got weaknesses in certain areas. There are some areas where you might say, one off, that's fine. And in fact, it is only one off. Because you haven't really got a weakness there much to speak about. But when John speaks about a disordered appetite, he's speaking about there's a weakness there. Okay? That's what he means by it is disordered. There's a weakness in this appetite. And once you allow one, the appetite will start to take over the soul. It blinds. So a good example is, just a little lie. You know, Catholics are great at white lies. Lutherans say you can never lie. A lie is a lie. They take the other extreme. Very strong. Very strong. Immanuel Kant, great Lutheran philosopher, is very strong. A whole ethics built up on truth, which cannot be undermined by anything. Can't tell a lie. No way. And there's a certain truth in that, but I mean you to be very careful about things. So do you see, that's all I want you to do at this moment is to identify within yourself how your appetites have begun to blind you. Because until you can see how it's working within yourself, any talk about the way out of here will just be theory for you. Okay, the next one. We'll leave defilement to last. We'll go to weaken, because this one, in fact, comes in quite easily.
Weakness. Where does weakness exist
in a person in terms of intellect, memory, and will?
The will.
The will, yeah.
It's not very difficult, is it?
I'm weak. That means I have a weak will. That means I can't make the choices that I meant to make. Now, John says that a disordered appetite weakens the soul. It means it weakens the will. It does two things for John. Once you make choices according to your appetites which are disordered, it is easier to make those same choices again. Not simply because the intellect is not working, but you no longer have the strength to fight. I've done it once, I'll do it twice, I've done it 10 times, I can't be bothered. It's funny the way we are. So what's happening there, you've got a compounding of the two. The two compound each other. What would generally save me and ensure that I'm acting as I should, the way God created me, is the intellect comes in and tells me, it becomes blinded, and because it's not telling me, another thing is also happening. You do it once, it's easier to do it the second time. It's easier to do it the third time, easier to do it the fourth time, until you don't even fight anymore. And you've got two things happening. The intellect's not stopping, trying to stop you, and you don't have the strength to stop anyway. What happens next? It becomes a habit. We just live like that. We don't reflect upon it because the intellect has lost its place. And even if Father did give a powerful homily and say, yeah, he's right, I'm too weak, I can't do it anymore. And both of these things happen because John speaks of the appetite is disordered. And the disordered appetite is now starting to work within me. And I don't care what the appetite is. For most of us, it's not particularly bad. You know, I'm not running around murdering, stealing and raping and looting. Haven't got time for that. The great thing about being a discalced Carmelite is the life is so ordered that by the time I do all the things I'm supposed to do, I want to go to sleep. I don't have time for anything. Perhaps Father Hilary did say that to me once. Poor old Father, he's dead now. But he said, you're very busy, aren't you, Father? I said, yes, I am, Father. He said, that's good. You should thank God. I said, why? Because it keeps the devil at bay. It's very hard for the devil to get in and undermine a busy man. Just make sure you keep praying, though, he said. That has to be there. Okay, but that's what happens. Can you see what John's saying? It's pretty obvious, isn't it? Let's look at the middle one, defilement. So, you know, you don't have to be very smart to work out what the next one is. It must be about memory. Now, remember what I said this morning about memory. Can you remember what I said? Memory is a place where things are imprinted in the soul. Okay, that's what a memory is, isn't it? There's something which is imprinted there. Whether it's something like a memory or whether it's knowledge. Remember, you've got a whole different kinds of memories. You've got memories of happiness, memories of anger, of sadness. You've got memories of events that happened that you can remember moment by moment. You've got memories of things you learned to recite when you were at school. You've got memories of words that you've learned. They're all different kinds of memories. I don't think just memory. But whatever they all are, they are different kinds of things which are implanted. Okay? There are things which are in you. Now, John speaks of these simply as forms. And I told you why he uses the word form, because in his way of thinking, that's the only way he can speak of something being imprinted in you without it being physically present. And don't worry about that, because that goes back to Aristotelian philosophy, and if you know about it, it's what's called hylomorphism. That's just me showing off, but I probably can't spell it. Okay? So if you know anything about Aristotle, that's where that's coming from. So there's something which is imprinted in you. Now, this in its own way should make you worry even more. Because if something's imprinted in you, the only way out of it is to deprint it. That's going to be very hard. If you've got a weakness in the will, how will you strengthen your will to do something? Because there's something more that you want, something greater. Okay, I'm very weak, I can't get up in the morning, I just want to stay in bed. But I've got a friend that I love very much that's dying, and the only way that I can help this friend is by getting up earlier in the morning. I'll be able to get up earlier in the morning. Because while the will might be weak, if I can motivate it and find a greater love,
I can begin to deal with that.
The intellect might be blind, but if I can sit down and take a good retreat or something and think it through, I can say, yes, I was mistaken. And I know that I'm going to still suffer this here, but I know that when this thought comes to me, this thought is false. And if I can work up the strength of my will, I can fight the thought and I can think something differently. The problem with an imprint is it's there. It's like a tattoo. You've got a tattoo. It's there. What are you going to do about it? How do you get rid of it? That's the thing about memory for John of the Cross. Once something is imprinted, it's there. And it's not simply that it's imprinted. There are different depths of imprint. And what are the different depths of imprint? The different interconnections that exist between this imprint and that imprint. The more the connections, suppose it's like a melanoma. It just grows like a cancer into all different places. What you're concerned about is how far it's spread. Not simply that it's there. That's the same with memory. The imprint is there, but it's spread. Because it connects with so many things. And because it has a multiplicity of connections, that's where it's hard to get rid of. If you've got a memory which is connected to nothing, you can forget it, which is kind of like someone says, Greg, when you walk up the street, would you post a letter? That's connected to no other memory, and I will forget. I had a letter, an urgent letter that I wanted to post to Sydney, and I took it to Perth. I got to Perth and I was about to go to Bunbury and I said to Father Sonny, please can you post this for me? Because I'm about to go even further away and I know that it won't get posted. You know, there are some things which you forget. And when you look at them, it's very often because they've got no connection to anything else. They're little things. That's why people forget short-term memory goes in a way. It's got no connection to anything else. It's not there. But let's begin by looking then to see what John means by disordered appetites can defile the memory.